Hello and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you and yours are doing well during the pandemic. I'm telling you. Do you get the impression that there are some people out there who'd like to just keep us frightened into submission? If that's your take on things, you are a very savvy individual. Very observant. Very savvy. Good on you. Because that's really what's going on. And no, I'm not paranoid. This is not conspiracy theory. I've been looking around, and it's funny how the red state governors are opening things up. The blue state governors are all keeping their citizenry, if they can, in a state of fear. Because they want them to be afraid so that big brother government can take care of them. Well, we're getting into things a little too early. So how are you doing today? I hope you're well. I hope yesterday was a good Monday for you and that you are ready to dive into a Tuesday, regardless of how deep or shallow that Tuesday pool may be. For some of us, it's not very deep at all. For others, yikes. It's just business as usual. And if that's you, good for you. And if not, well, hopefully sanity will prevail where you live at some point in the near future, and you can get back to your life as you used to live it. I know, there are a lot of people saying, we just can't go back to normal. There needs to be a new normal. No, don't listen to those people. Those people are responding to fear in fear. Those people are scared, and they've allowed the news media and the politicians to scare them, which delights the news media and those politicians, because those people are, they're easy to manipulate. When you're afraid, you let people tell you to do things you wouldn't normally do. Don't be afraid. Be wise. Don't be one of the sheep. Well, I went back into it again, didn't I? Scanning Twitter right before we got things started here, I was looking at, you know how you get little notifications about the friends and acquaintances who are tweeting things? And I was reminded of something my friend Earl tweeted the other day, just a couple of days ago. And I meant to mention it yesterday, and it just got away from me. And he tweeted, you know, quarantines and staying at home are true tests of relationships because you're together so much. It's true. I love my kids, but at the same time, I think we should see other people. It's not me. It's not them. It's me. They are locked down at home right now, and I've been enjoying watching their updates on Twitter and Facebook. They're really into it. He worked for a while, and then he had to get furloughed, and now he's home. And they've got two precious kids, and his wife is, I think his wife is actually, I'm a little confused. Some days it looks like she's working, some days it's not. I haven't bothered to actually stick my nose into it. I've just been kind of watching from a distance. But yesterday, Earl's wife posted something. This was yesterday evening. It just absolutely cracked me up. I almost fell off my chair because she posted a picture of a door. And it's funny because of what she said in her post, and that was that one of her children had learned that you don't slam doors in this house because mama don't play. She had taken the door off the hinges and laid it in the hallway against the wall. You gonna slam a door? Okay, you have no more door to slam. So I think the tweet about seeing other people is really true for these guys. Oh, God bless them. Oh, that's funny stuff. My wife and I both had a good laugh about that. Oh, man. So here we are at Tuesday. We made it through a Monday. We're on Tuesday, one of those days of the week that gets no respect. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for some people. For some reason, people get excited about, but Tuesday and Thursday, meh, well, what do you say? But here we are. And here's a thought to begin your Tuesday. To think about. Well, I say begin your Tuesday because I'm doing this at 9, 8 Central in the morning. You may be listening to this at some other time, and thank you. I appreciate that. But here's something to think about, to mentally chew upon today. As Attorney General Barr and his team continue to uncover corruption in the Obama administration, we keep learning more and more about the constant lies by Democrats to support that whole Russia scam to destroy President Trump. And then there's the unquestioning repetition of everything by the progressive news media. Keep something in mind. The plan was for Hillary Clinton to win the election, and for us to never know anything about any of this. That was the plan. They were so confident they had everything rigged. They were so confident that Hillary was going to win and that there would be another 8 years. Another 8 years of
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That they felt like they could do anything. And they had for 8 years, almost 8 solid years, been thumbing their nose at the Constitution and operating in an amazingly unlawful manner throughout the Obama administration, about the term of his office. They felt like they could get away with anything. They were so confident they'd rigged the election and Hillary is going to be the next president, they believed they could do anything they wanted without fear of consequences. And then Donald Trump won. And ever since then, they have been with the intensity of a rabid animal, ripping and tearing at anything and everything they can. And they will not stop. I think it's a very, very good thing that we are learning what we're learning right now. That General Flynn was railroaded. That he was set up. That he was put into a perjury trap. We're learning these things because people who really are respecting the rule of law, really, not just doing lip service to the rule of law, but who actually do respect the rule of law. These people are executing the law, and they are digging into what has happened, and they're learning things, and we're learning from them. And hopefully, we will see justice, real justice, come to bear on those who have been ignoring real justice for so long and using the government and the tools and departments of the government against those who disagree with them, which is what happened for 8 years under the Obama administration. We're seeing the desperation play out every day from the left. We're seeing them screeching and squealing and carrying on like bratty children in the supermarket, laying in the floor, pitching a temper tantrum when they can't get what they want. And it happened at a press conference. President Donald Trump and numerous journalists have slammed left-wing CBS News reporter Weijia Zhang yesterday because of her behavior during the White House Coronavirus Task Force news conference. Apparently, Ms. Zhang believes that Jim Acosta is someone to be emulated and to be admired. And she's going to learn otherwise. First, Zhang falsely suggested that Trump delayed widespread testing to cover up the extent of the coronavirus testing in the U.S. so he could reopen the economy. The Washington Post and the New York Times had reported already that the delay in testing came from manufacturing errors at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, where the tests were accidentally contaminated and testing was delayed as a result for weeks. Zhang also suggested that Trump was trying to open the economy for political reasons, which completely ignores the fact that tens of millions of Americans have lost their jobs. Some are struggling to feed their families, and suicides are projected to skyrocket. Jiang later suggested that Trump's desire to be the best in the world at testing was a bad thing because of the number of Americans who are dying every day from the coronavirus. And Trump said to ask China that question. To which Jiang, who describes herself as Chinese-born in her Twitter bio, tried to turn Trump's statement into a racial incident. Surprisingly, numerous journalists called her out. Called her antics at the news conference out. Colby Hall from Mediaite tweeted, "If Trump had never before mentioned China in context with the coronavirus, then his ask China to an Asian reporter might be considered unfairly racialized, but calling it out as racist seems an irresponsible reach." Rob Schmidt from Fox News tweeted, "Did she try to turn this into a race thing?" Former White House advisor Stephen Chung tweeted, "Weijia Jiang has managed to outdo Acosta at his own game of grandstanding at press conference for self-promotion / resistance retweets. How else do you think someone who has never broken a big, interesting story gets a ton of Twitter followers in just a few months?" Breitbart editor Joel Pollack tweeted, "Aside from Weijia's ridiculous insinuation about racism, her early questions were also obnoxious. The first presumed that Donald Trump acted out of political motives. The second presumed Democrats do not have such motives. She also said it's politics to want the economy to grow." Pollack added, "Does any sane person actually buy Weijia's victim shtick? The idea that Donald Trump would only tell an Asian American reporter China is the problem is absurd. He's been saying it to everyone for weeks. Impossible she actually believes what she's suggesting. Although, who knows?" Jiang has a history of making unsubstantiated claims during the Trump era, including claiming that someone in the Trump administration called the coronavirus the Kung Flu to her face. Jiang refused to name who it was. And when she was called out by White House senior advisor Kellyanne Conway, Jiang continued to refuse to identify the person. Jiang was also the reporter who claimed that there was a tape of Trump using the N-word, but she was never able to produce any evidence that it actually existed. So Weijia Jiang is just another lying progressive hack reporter who is looking for her moment in the spotlight and hoping that one of her gotcha lie-based questions will make her famous and increase her salary. She has nothing of any substance or anything based in reality to report or claim. And so, when she is challenged, she makes it into a race issue, which supports that old joke that we've had circulating around for a few years now, is that a racist is anyone who defeats a progressive in an argument. It is true, because when you back these people into a corner and they have nowhere else to go and they can't support what they claim with reality, truth, facts, and honesty, I shouldn't have said honesty. These people are anything but honest. They lash out and accuse others of heinous things like racism. And so, Weijia Jiang of CBS News is just another leftist political hack like Jim Acosta. She will never be taken seriously. And her colleagues in the news industry know this, and they're saying it out loud, so to speak, on Twitter. She is beclowning herself and revealing the folly of progressivism in the press. And good for President Trump for ending the news conference when he did. Because when it became unserious, as it did with her pitching her little hissy fit and crying racism when something was clearly not racist, and then one of her colleagues deferred to her rather than taking up her opportunity to ask the president a question, and the president said, "That's it, forget it," and walked off, he did the right thing. He was the one calling the shots, not them. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Tuesday, the 12th day of May, 2020. You know I loves me some Just Facts Daily. Today's question of the day. What portion of all adults in the U.S. report that worry and stress related to COVID-19 is harming their mental health badly enough to create physical effects? One more time. What portion of all adults in the United States report that worry and stress related to COVID-19 is harming their mental health badly enough to create physical effects? Is it less than 20%, 20 to 40%, or more than 40%? What's your answer? If you answered more than 40%, you're correct. A scientific nationally representative survey conducted by the Kaiser Family Foundation in late April found that 56% of U.S. adults report that worry and stress related to COVID-19 is affecting their mental health and well-being in various ways, such as trouble sleeping, poor appetite, or overeating, frequent headaches or stomach aches, difficulty controlling their temper, increasing their alcohol or drug use, and worsening chronic conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure. Excessive stress and anxiety are among the most debilitating and deadly of all health hazards in the world, and a recent study by Just Facts shows that anxiety from reactions to COVID-19, such as stay-at-home orders, business shutdowns, media exaggerations, and legitimate concerns about the virus, will destroy at least 7 times more years of life than can possibly be saved by lockdowns. So, what this says is that the government, these petty tyrants, tiny tyrants in the blue states, these people are actually doing more harm, much more harm than good, destroying at least 7 times more years of life than could possibly be saved by what they're doing. 40%. Americans are doers. It's part of our, it's part of the fabric of who we are. We're not people who sit and watch the world go by. We are people who are out there grabbing the handles that turn the world and make it move. We are those people. You've heard me, if you've listened for any length of time, you've heard me talk about how if it weren't for the United States of America, millions of people alive today would not be alive because of our developments, our innovation, our drive to succeed and to find answers, to find cures for diseases, to find medical treatments, to develop surgeries, to explore beyond the next, but to go beyond the horizon, to see what's there. Because of that desire and that drive, which is exceptional and is denied by progressives. They say there's nothing truly exceptional about America. They're lying to you. Because of that drive and that exceptionalism, the rest of the world is far, far better off than it would be without it. And that drive doesn't do well when it's cooped up at home. It does what it can. Trust me, there are people, these people who are true cultural catalysts, these people who make a difference wherever you place them, those people, their houses look great. Their yards look great. Their cars are shiny and clean. Everything about their lives is great because they're driving that energy into other things right now. But they really, really want to be out there making a difference, contributing, and rolling things forward. And that has to happen by reopening states. It has to happen. Well, President Donald Trump accused Democrats yesterday of moving to reopen U.S. states from the coronavirus lockdown measures too slowly, and they're doing it for political advantage. President Trump, who's running for re-election in November, is working to reopen the crippled economy quickly against recommendations from health experts to move more cautiously to avoid a resurgence of the virus that has so far killed more than 80,000 people in the United States, if you believe the CDC's numbers. Trump has encouraged states to ease restrictions designed to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus. Monday, he targeted the election battleground state of Pennsylvania, which has a Democratic governor, Tom Wolf. By the way, the people of Pennsylvania, a lot of them are protesting. A lot of them are stepping up and looking at Governor Wolf and saying, hey, drop the Tyranny Act and let us get back to life. President Trump said the great people of Pennsylvania want their freedom now, and they're fully aware of what that entails. The Democrats are moving slowly all over the USA for political purposes. They would wait until November 3rd if it were up to them. Don't play politics. Be safe. Move quickly, says Trump in a Twitter post. Some of the states hardest hit by the coronavirus outbreak that has infected more than 1.3 million nationwide are led by Democratic governors, including New York and Michigan, both important prizes in the November 3rd election between Trump and the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, Joe Biden. Trump has encouraged reopenings with tweets calling on people to liberate their states, providing fuel to protests across the country, including large gatherings in the Michigan capital of Lansing. The politicization of the health crisis is playing out at local levels as well as Democrats and Republicans clash over reopening plans. In Pennsylvania, some counties over the weekend asked Wolf to move their regions into the group he is targeted for earlier reopenings, according to media reports. Officials in Lancaster County sent Wolf a letter Saturday notifying him that they intend to move forward with reopening on May 15th, ahead of his schedule for the area. State Senator Ryan P. Aument, a Republican, said in a Twitter post yesterday, Lancaster County has demonstrated time and time again that our leaders are able to find local solutions to local problems through collaboration. This approach is far different than that of the governor. Trump's overall popularity has been mostly flat through the pandemic, with the number of adults who approve of him wavering between 40% and 45% from March to May. That's according to Reuters Ipsos, and it is, of course, polling. And, you know, polling doesn't truly reflect opinion. Polling is used to influence opinion. I love what this guy, the state senator, Aument said. That our leaders have demonstrated time and time again they're able to find local solutions to local problems through collaboration. In other words, these guys get it. They know what it takes to solve problems. On the ground, at street level, doing what has to be done in their communities. And their governor is detached from that. And as a progressive, he is doubly, probably triply detached from that, because he's not there in their communities. He's not talking to those people in those communities. He's talking to political wonks, which he has surrounded himself with, who tell him what the theorists and the experts all say. I'm sorry, I should have said
experts.
Yeah, the experts, those guys who've gotten everything wrong so far, including Dr. Fauci, who has been wrong about so much. If you live in Pennsylvania, let me encourage you. Be smart. Don't be stupid. Be smart. Be safe. Keep your senior citizens safe. But be smart. We can get back to work. We can get the economy going again, and it will recover quickly. Remember the description I had about Americans and that exceptionalism we have? Because of that, our economy will ramp back up again. The progressives haven't numbed enough brains yet to harm that. And we've seen the proof of that and the truth of that since the 2016 election. What Barack Obama said would never happen again has happened again. And it happened quickly. And one of the reasons that the Democrats, the progressives, at the national and state level and local levels, all of these different places, these progressives want things to operate slowly. They want things to turn around slowly. They want these things because they want as much damage as possible. You'd have to be blind not to have seen their comments already to the news organizations talking about how President Trump is failing, how his economy has crumbled, how all of these things are going badly, and how horribly he's handling the coronavirus crisis, which is the exact opposite of what's happening. But it's not the opposite of what's happening in progressive-controlled states. Things in those states are going badly. Things in those states are falling apart. Things in those states are dire. It's not good there. But that's not true of what President Trump's been doing. Not at all. They're lying again for political gain. Welcome back. About halfway through this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Thanks so much for being there. I appreciate you listening. For subscribing to the podcast and sharing with your friends. It's good to have you along today. This 12th day of May 2020. Oh, man. Let's see here. I was talking about that exceptionalism, that quality that Americans have that drive us forward, that won't let us take no for an answer, that drives us sometimes over the cliff into failure, but more often than not, after that failure, we succeed. And one terrific example of that is a guy named Elon Musk. Yeah, I know. He's please, you don't have to write me. I know. He's the head guy, the CEO at Tesla. And you know, he's been having a fight with the state of California. Actually, more specifically, Alameda County, California, where they've decided that he can't open his factory yet because they haven't had the chance to fully inspect his facilities and his reopening procedures and the like. And they're saying, whoa there, big fella. You can't open up until we give you the official okey-doke. Well, he's got lots of people, thousands of people that work for him who need to feed their families. And he knows the economy's got to be restarted. And unless places like Tesla open back up again, that's not going to happen. And when you have petty bureaucrats, tiny tyrants, who are so consumed with their own rules and regulations that they can't see past their own noses, then you have problems. And he's having problems. I told you about it, right? Yesterday. Well, he confirmed yesterday he is flouting county rules by reopening a Northern California plant amid concerns over safety during the coronavirus crisis. He's tweeted, I'll be on the line with everyone else. If anyone is arrested, I ask that it only be me. The parking lot of the Fremont, California facility was full, according to Fox 2, even as Musk and Alameda County officials continue to spar over shelter-in-place rules that have prevented the electric vehicle giant from reopening since March 23rd. Musk tweeted, Tesla is restarting production today against Alameda County rules. I will be on the line with everyone else. If anyone is arrested, I ask that it only be me. He also said, California approved, but an unelected county official illegally overrode. Also, all other auto companies in the U.S. are approved to resume. Only Tesla has been singled out. This is super messed up. The county later responded in a statement saying, "We have notified Tesla that they can only maintain minimum basic operations until we have an approved plan that can be implemented in accordance with the local public health officer." Or order, I should say. Public health order. "We are addressing this matter using the same phased approach we used for other businesses which have violated the order in the past, and we hope that Tesla will likewise comply without further enforcement measures." Wow. That is political speak for "don't make us come over there." Jeez. "We hope Tesla will likewise comply without further enforcement measures." And honestly, given what I've seen so far, I wouldn't be at all surprised if these further enforcement measures included shutting off the power and water to the plant, barricading the doors and the gates, fining everybody who's present on the property. Because when it comes to enforcing regulations, you don't mess with progressives. They're all about flexing their political muscle. They don't have any other kind of authority, but doggone it, they're going to make you hurt if you cross their lines. At a Monday news conference, Governor Gavin Newsom, of course you know he's a delusional Democrat, said he was hopeful the company could resume operations next week. Quote, "We recognize localism both from a county previous questions about if a county wants to go further and other counties that don't want to even go as far as the state, which is the case in Alameda County. My understanding is they have had some very constructive conversations with the folks at that facility," the county health director. "They're working to focus on the health and safety of the employees at that facility. My belief and hope and expectation is as early as next week, they'll be able to resume." He added that manufacturing broadly across the state was no longer restricted with modifications. Let me go back and take that apart for just a moment here. "They're working to focus on the health and safety of the employees at that facility." Remember, the employees at that facility are at that facility working. Why? Why are they there? Is it because Elon Musk showed up at their door with a shotgun and said, "You will go back to work"? Is it because Elon Musk sent some pencil-necked authoritarian to the door with a clipboard and said, "We have your name and address and your phone number. We know all about your internet accounts. We know everything about you. And if you don't go back to work, we're going to ruin your life"? Did he force these people to come back to work? No, these people made an educated guess. They decided to take a chance. They realized they needed to work to pay their bills. They know they have to feed their families. They know they have personal responsibilities, which they must fulfill. And on top of that, these people want to work for a company that's breaking ground, that's doing amazing things with technology and changing the future. That's what Americans do. They're changing the face of the planet by being exceptional. So these are exceptional people doing exceptional work for an exceptional company. And they've made the decision that they're adults and they alone can decide what's best for them. But progressive government believes it's their job to decide what is best for them. And so, for the good of the people, the health and safety of the employees at the facility, these little pencil-necked, pale geeks who stand behind microphones in front of cameras and speak as experts and officials, believe they are wiser, smarter, and better qualified to know what they need to do. Governor Newsom said he spoke with Elon Musk several days ago about the county shelter-in-place rules. In a weekend tweet storm, a frustrated Elon Musk wrote he was filing a lawsuit to halt the local restrictions and predicted relocating to Tesla's Palo Alto, California headquarters to Texas or Nevada. We talked about that yesterday. Tesla released a copy of the lawsuit hours later. In a bid to repair the state's fractured economy, Newsom announced last week that manufacturing facilities could be reopened. However, Tesla was informed by the Alameda County Health Care Services Agency that it would have to wait until its return to work plan was approved. That prompted outrage from Musk, who called the restrictions fascist and unconstitutional. He's actually right about that. It's not a stretch. It's not an overreach to call this fascist or unconstitutional. It is definitely unconstitutional. It is definitely unconstitutional. And it is bordering on fascist. Controlling everything. And punishing those who dissent. Yesterday, a company employee said he worked from 6 p.m. Sunday through 6 a.m. Monday, and that Tesla was up and running. Under the restrictions, the company is allowed a certain level of staffing for maintenance, inventory, and payroll. Tesla didn't respond to requests from Fox News for comments. That's who this is coming from. The company's outlined a series of measures it planned to institute, which was based on the reopening plan for its Shanghai, China factory. The lack of production in Fremont is a big financial strain on the company. On a conference call last month, Musk called the closure of Fremont a serious risk. So these petty bureaucrats in Alameda County, California, are ignoring the drive of the American spirit and the needs of a company in the interest of public health, because after all, they are progressives and they know best. Remember what I say all the time. Progressives passionately believe that they are both intellectually and morally superior to you. That you're too stupid to run life on your own. And you need them. Well, Americans everywhere are responding rather badly to that kind of political attitude. Members of the Michigan militia said they're not going to be allowing police to arrest Carl Mankey. He's 77. He opened his Owosso barbershop last week in defiance of Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's coronavirus shutdown order. They said, Daniel Brewer, a member of the group, said, "We're here to make sure he doesn't get arrested. We're willing to stand in front of that door and block the entrance so the police will have no entrance there today." The barbershop's been open since last Monday against state order and received a packed lobby full of customers the first morning, as well as two citations before Friday. Still, dozens of supporters gathered outside Mankey's barbershop Saturday, and 15 customers were waiting in line outside the door for haircuts. Mankey says he followed Whitmer's shutdown order for as long as he could, but after multiple extensions of the order and no money coming in after being twice denied unemployment, he had to return to work. He says, "I'm not trying to be a scofflaw. I'm trying to make a living. I tried for the unemployment. I was denied twice unemployment. I haven't seen anything in one of these other checks from the government." Mankey, speaking inside his barbershop as he was cutting a customer's hair, told the Detroit Free Press that Whitmer, quote, "is not my mother. I just made an adult decision that I was going to open up." I like that. Friday night, state police issued Mankey a health protection order from State Attorney General Dana Nessel's office demanding he close his shop, noting that customers from Ann Arbor, Saginaw, Detroit, Jackson, and other areas have visited his business. They're coming from everywhere. And that raises the risk of spreading the coronavirus. But he's opening up anyway. He made an adult decision. In other words, he's a businessman. He's in his 70s. He's not a child. He's not an idiot. He recognizes the risks. He's willing to take the risk because he's got to pay his bills and people need his service. He's not an idiot. He knows what he's doing. But pencil-pushing bureaucrats, progressives, believe they know better.
Great. Googly moogly.
That's what I'm always saying. Nobody listens to me. It's the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, diving into the final segment for this Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. Now, I wanted to go back to something I was talking about yesterday. General Michael Flynn. And a lot of people, the reason I want to go back to this is because a lot of people don't understand the reason he got fired in the first place. The first time. Not by President Trump, but by Barack Obama. There's an article from PJ Media by Jim Fennell, and I wanted to share that with you because it digs into the reason why. And it's important to know why. Because this goes to the character of the Obama administration. The Department of Justice has requested, with prejudice, to withdraw the case of former Obama administration officials built against retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. Americans now need to investigate why outgoing President Obama told incoming President Trump that after Kim Jong-un, the only other issue he had to worry about was General Flynn. He said that to Trump. The answers will lead us to intelligence reform. We don't have a fully coherent explanation in the public discussion for why Director Comey's FBI targeted General Flynn in a perjury trap. The dominant media narrative asserts attacking General Flynn was a stepping stone to weakening President Trump's administration by targeting his appointed officials. However, the Washington establishment's fear and animus toward Mr. Trump only partially explains the FBI's extraordinarily corrupt conspiracy targeting and trapping the retired war veteran general. There's more. The U.S. intelligence community, the USIC, of which the FBI is a member, deeply feared General Flynn because of his attempted reforms as director of the underperforming Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, which for $22 billion per year was not able to recognize Islamic terrorism, assess the People's Republic of China, the PRC, being engaged in expansionism, or warn of other threats to the United States, even as those issues were discussed in newspapers around the world. General Flynn served in an age of wonder. ISIS was burning pilots in cages, mass raping Yazidi cities, and pushing homosexuals off buildings. Russian green men with heavy weapons invaded Ukraine. The president of the PRC stood next to the president of the United States in the Rose Garden and declared to the world that China would not militarize the South China Sea, even though the People's Liberation Army had already begun building artillery emplacements at its military occupations. American leaders proclaimed admiration for the Venezuelan dictator, who was dragging his nation toward famine. Castro schooled Obama at a baseball game, while the Cuban dictator's regime sonically attacked U.S. diplomats. The International Monetary Fund broke its own rules to extend special withdrawal rights to China's RMB, which only stays stable by communist fiat. Washington brokered an agreement which had Beijing anticipating reaping tens of billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars from the U.N. Climate Fund. The U.S. Air Force flew plane loads of gold and booty to Iranian leaders, who immediately funneled the treasure to General Soleimani's terrorists. PLA Navy officers were toasted by U.S. Navy leaders in Hawaii, while the Chinese communists simultaneously aggressed Japan, the Philippines, and Vietnam in East Asia. Throughout this period, DIA remained gobsmacked, spinning events to fit Ben Rhodes' narratives of U.S. leadership and control, even as U.S. influence plummeted and instability exploded. The Obama administration had elevated senior intelligence executives whose core competence was alignment of intelligence assessments to political narratives, rather than objective assessment of the real world. $22 billion per year is a lot to pay for wrong answers that were too biased to serve any purpose in the defense of the United States. The assessments were kept secret, in any case, except to our closest allies, which began to lose faith in us. General Flynn attempted to rationalize the mess DIA had become, but he came under attack from above and below. The well-paid and privileged leadership team he inherited at DIA had a white-hot hatred for him. They slandered him as a loose cannon, called him a dumpster fire, and undercut him at every opportunity. Retired Lieutenant General James Clapper was the Director of National Intelligence, senior to General Flynn, who at the time was still on active duty. While DIA leaders undercut General Flynn from below, Mr. Clapper attacked General Flynn from above because General Flynn was committing the ultimate sin of the Obama administration. He was telling the truth, rather than repeating Ben Rhodes' narratives. The writer of the article, by the way, Jim Fennell, says, full disclosure, I'm not unbiased. I gave a speech in 2014 which discussed PRC maritime expansion in the South China Sea, which the Obama administration and DIA at the time denied was happening. I was warned immediately after and fired later in the year. When President Trump was elected, General Flynn posed an existential threat to the secret mandarins of the USIC. Americans had a sense that the federal government had spun out of control, and General Flynn, as National Security Advisor, would help President Trump end the corruption and rebuild the intelligence community. General Flynn had already established credibility in the field in Afghanistan as a change agent who could strategically outwit terrorists, and next as director of DIA, where he challenged the entrenched status quo of expensive fabrication of endless politically correct assessments. The nation is correctly focused on the lawlessness of the Obama administration, but Americans should not forget that the reason General Flynn was fired the first time by the Obama administration was because of his honesty, not because he lied. The FBI's carefully constructed perjury trap came later in a Soviet-style attempt to slander Mr. Flynn with the antonym of his chief virtue. A second Trump administration must make intelligence community reform across all 17 agencies a top priority, because the very essence of useful intelligence assessments is to accept the truth as it exists in front of us, not the party line. And that is by Captain James Fennell. He's retired. He was the former director for intelligence for the U.S. Navy's Pacific Fleet in Honolulu. And his perspective is correct. General Flynn was fired by the Obama administration for being honest. He was trying to correct the error of political correctness. He was trying to steer the ship back away from the rocks of progressive thought. And that could not happen. It could not happen. And so, as the Trump administration took the reins of America, or was to take the reins of America, the Obama administration sought to discredit this one person who was being honest, who was telling the truth, and trying to get our intelligence agencies back on course again, discerning and telling the truth about what's happening in the world around us, rather than playing progressive politics, playing games, and participating in the delusion of progressivism. Progressivism doesn't see things through the lens of reality. Progressivism sees things as though they want things to be. And while that can be an admirable quality in leadership, it has to be rooted in reality, in truth, and honesty. If it's not, it's fascism, because it will do everything it can to get what it wants, including victimizing the people, while telling them it's for their own good. What we're watching happening with a health crisis, I'm air quoting, health crisis right now, is an example of progressive leadership in action. You will comply, or you will be punished. Elon Musk is the example we just talked about a few moments ago. It's happening across the country on a state-by-state level in blue states. And we're watching things play out in Washington, D.C. as the Trump administration is beginning to expose the fascism, the lies, the manipulation, and the control put in place by the Obama administration. And that's why they're all objecting so harshly and why they're trying to destroy him. And now it's time to go. I hope you've had a good one so far. We'll see you back here Tuesday, or Wednesday, that's tomorrow, for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless. I'll get my day straight, I promise. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.